Okay, let's start. Welcome to our, for this year, first GBF meeting. And I'm happy that you all have made it, because I think it is really important that we have this group and the input from you to our standard setting process. Before we go into the agenda, let me then give a special welcome to our two new members, which is Shiro Sumihara from Japan. Welcome, and thank you that you are joining this group. And secondly, we have Frank Farmer from Australia. Thank you also very much for joining this group. And do we turn this off? No, it's fine. Okay. So we are in public, and we go into the agenda, and we start with the ISP update. And you
good morning to you all. You will realise, if you've been to these meetings before, that we have for the first time given you a paper to read. So the idea is for me to talk a little bit less and give you more opportunity to ask questions. Nonetheless, I'll give you a few quick highlights. As I go through, you'll also have spotted that there's a work plan, an updated work plan on the table in front of you. There are one or two changes compared to the work plan that we included in the paper that we did give you. I'll touch on what those changes are as I go through. There aren't many, actually, but just to mention those. So I'll just give you a quick run through the big projects. I'm not going to talk through everything in the paper, but obviously you can ask whichever questions you want. And I'll also give a little bit of update on the what happened in the February board meeting, where there's more or less detail depending on which topic you look at in the actual paper. So on insurance contracts, if you're following it, as you know, the board is continuing to deliberate participating contracts. The current intention is for the board to complete deliberations later in this year. That is the board's plan, and we'll see where we get to in terms of the producing the actual standard after that. In the February board meeting, there was some discussion of aggregation, the topic of aggregation, which is an important one to the industry, and there will be further discussion of participating contracts in this month's board meeting. Then on leases, I guess the headline is that we are getting ready to ballot, in other words, to get ready to actually write the final standard for publication later this year. Since we last met, the boards agreed on the definition of a lease, which I'm sure we all agree is a good thing, but in particular how one distinguishes lease contracts from services. Essentially what has happened is that we have the definition that was used in the 2013 exposure draft, and in summary basically says that if a customer has control of the asset for a defined period of time, then you have an asset. In the February board meeting, there was some discussion of transition requirements, as well as, which will be of interest to you, the exemption for leases of small assets, so recognition and measurement exemption for leases of small assets. The number that was discussed in the board paper was $5,000. There's some discussion about whether that's the right level. There will be further discussion of that in the basis for conclusions when it's published. Then in terms of the conceptual framework, this is one of the items where there's been a small move in terms of the timetable. In order to take account of a small number of sweep issues, it's now the intention to publish the exposure draft of the conceptual framework in April. So just a small change there. We had up until recently been showing it as a Q1 event. But essentially the project is on track. Then on the disclosure initiative, I guess since we last met, important points, we published final amendments to IAS 1. So those amendments, which are not that many, but I think important to use preparers, which are really encouraging preparers to exercise judgment in terms of what you disclose in accounts, and things like how you order the notes of the accounts, encouraging preparers to think about roofing notes to the accounts in a way which is logical or consistent or coherent to them. We also published proposed amendments and exposure draft to IAS 7 on cash flow statements, which is improving information to users about an entity's financing activities, but also adding some disclosures on the entity's liquidity. One small change in the timetable, so I guess the cornerstone, if you like, the principle of the disclosure initiative is the principles of disclosure thread of this wider project, and we expect to produce a discussion paper on that subject by the end of this year. That's moved out from around the middle of this year to allow for further consultation and deliberation. The last thing I just wanted to highlight, and this is, I'm sure, will be of interest to you, is the, which we touched on in the paper, which is the Revenue Recognition Transition Resource Group. I guess what to say on that. That group has met a number of times. I think our feeling is that the group is working well in the sense that most of the issues which come to the group, it is agreed that people will be able to understand the issues, apply the standard in the right way. However, if you've been following this subject, you'll also realise that the board discussed some issues, or both boards discussed some issues at the February board meeting. And if you're following, you'll discover this or realise there's some pressure in the US to actually start changing the standard. I think one of the important things the ISB did was have a generic paper to think about the consequences of that, what would be the ramifications of that. We then went into a discussion of two particular topics, license of intellectual property and identifying performance obligations. In the former, both boards decided to clarify some of the application guidance. But the ISB decided to do that only in respect of two issues, and in respect of the total four issues discussed under that heading. The FASB decided to make some changes for this, whereas the ISB did not. So you can already see some passing of the waves, if you like. And in relation to identification of performance obligations, both boards decided to add some illustrative examples, so they are not part of the authoritative text of the standard. But again, there was some areas in which the ISB decided not to add examples, whereas the FASB is looking like certainly will. So, a difficult topic. One of the points on the updated work plan you have in front of you is you'll see that there is a plan to produce an exposure draft, for the ISB to produce an exposure draft around the middle of the year. So, our intention is to group the issues where we think change is needed, and to do it as one batch to keep it as clear and straightforward for preparers as possible. But it's a difficult area, and one on which the board is continuing to deliberate very hard. I think that's all I wanted to say in terms of the summary.
So if I can kick off, thanks a lot, Hugh, for that. If I can kick off, perhaps you, I'm going to have a few comments. So perhaps you're not going to have to. First of all, a compliment to you. We discussed in our private session ahead of time. We really like the way you incorporate in the back sort of almost a feedback on how you took account of our comments. We felt that was a great improvement, and thank you for that. I'm sure Isabella did that. Thank you. Moving on to the, perhaps a couple of points we talked about just to pre-discussion before. On the leases point, you mentioned in paragraph 18 a converged project, but how converged is the leasing project with US GAAP? Perhaps I stopped there. I have some other comments, but I stopped there.
Well, I think the really big point about the leases project is to get lease liabilities on balance sheets, and I think that in that sense we are converged. Clearly, we're not in terms of the income statement, and that's where there are some, to us, conceptually support distinction between interest expense and amortization. That's our model. That's the model that has received support when we've discussed with our stakeholders. And there are a number of other points of detail, actually. There's going to be a document going on the website shortly, which is going to compare and contrast how we do set up against the FASB on this. And actually, I meant to mention there is recently we put a document on the website in relation to the definition of a lease, which is actually a very well written and extremely clearly articulated document, which this other second document comparing the US GAAP will also be. So I think the feeling is that on the important point of recognising leases on balance sheet, we converge, but obviously we acknowledge that we're not in other respects. That's where we are.
And you know, when you think about analysts tend to focus, in my view anyway, a lot on the income statement, perhaps less on the balance sheet, certainly the equity analysts. So are you really meeting the goals of, you know, US GAAP filers and IFRS filers having
this subject
sufficiently converged income statement approach?
This subject has been much debated at all our advisory bodies. We've discussed at the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum in particular, also been discussed at the Advisory Council. Obviously it's disappointing that we're not fully converged, but I think we've had to weigh up the desire to have a conceptually strong model with the need to converge, and this is where we've landed.
Why bother even saying you're converged? Why even bother doing that? You know, some of us, I wish my company was more, and I wish the U.S. were strong supporters of one global set of GAAP. It's gotten totally out of hand. We can't even keep up with our statutory filings, which no one looks at, but we go through massive amounts of trying to figure out what even the different accounting is. But let's stop playing the game. Why even say it's converged? It's not even close to converged. Both of you have gone your own ways. It's two different boards that see differently, people see differently. Let's stop the game. Ship sailed.
I think that one thing I would say is if you stand right back, and as I said at the beginning, and try to answer Malcolm's question, the major point is having a complete picture of liabilities and having a correct depiction of the leverage of the company. So that's the really big point.
It's just, you're saying what Malcolm's saying, the income statement's totally different, so why even bother?
You're not winning any friends with preparers when all insists on continuing to say converge. Those of us that are IFRS filers in the US, we have to deal with the SEC. If you're converged, you're converged. If you're not, you're not. And so when I hear comments, even on IFRS 15, that the FASB is going to give, this is a converged statement, but the FASB is going to have these examples, but we're not going to do it. Well, I've got to deal with the SEC questions on a converged statement. So stop using the word. If they're not the same, they're not the same. And I think history has shown us that there's not one converged statement, because on every single one, the EITF has brought out explanations that the ISB has chosen not to. And sometimes I think the EITF explanation is a waste of time. But it hurts us as preparers when dealing with regulators.
And I think the board acknowledged last week, or 2 weeks ago, in the revenue discussion, that effectively having different words will result in different outcomes in some cases. But at the same time, the board was helpful to acknowledge that a lot of the outcomes would be broadly similar. But you're right, the words are different, and that there will be different outcomes as a result of those decisions. So it wasn't a decision made lightly at all. Very careful consideration, but you know, you have to respond to the respective feedback that you hear from your various stakeholder groups.
And as I said, you know, we're the guys that have to deal with the answers from the regulators, because then you're creating problems for preparers by, instead of saying principles are similar but different outcomes, we can't drop this conversion word because it's the regulators are using it against us, and therefore we have to justify our judgment.
I have the same view with DPA members. I don't think if regarding this project, the both votes have not converged. The members of ISB say that the difference is small, but in our view, the difference is huge. Model 2 model versus 1 model, the very different model. So, especially in Japan, we have a significant concern regarding the convergence with the FSB. and from the perspective of multinationals, we have many group companies all over the world, including United States and other than United States. If you move on this your tentative solution, we need to collect two types of data for multinationals. It's a significant burden. I think you should make much more effort to reconcile the difference.
Okay. Well, my point is maybe from the crew, because we're hearing different views, because when you're saying, okay, clearly we are not converged on the income statement, you're saying maybe we should try to be converged, but you're saying maybe you should not, we should not bother to be converged.
You're
this getting of mixed views, man. We're hearing that in several projects, and
let's
this is really...
this is not directed at you, but let's all step up and be adults about it. You're not going to converge no matter what. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So let's just get on with it. This is ridiculous. You know, we should have all acted like adults years ago, and everyone was in there with personal interests, and now we're complaining. You pointed out the preparers. We'll all blame us. We should have taken the opportunity we had, is my personal opinion. Now it's a total mess. Us sitting here complaining is not going to help. You're not going to get converged unless it's a total turnover of both boards. So why are we wasting our time talking about it? It's just so frustrating.
It seems to be a political, you know, we promised the G20 we'd get to a converged solution. So let's keep saying the same words that the G20 keeps quiet. Let's just tell the truth.
So, thank you. I feel very sorry that we couldn't make a 100% fully converged one with the FASI, but I'm very sorry. But my feeling is you are supporting our position generally. So thank you for that again, dear. But I'm feeling that your preference generally is a kind of a principle-based standard rather than a kind of rule-based standard in the US. So that's why you are supporting our position, I guess. So that's a quite good support for us to make a good conclusion, even though we are talking about a convergence as much as possible with the FASI. But your support is a kind of principle-based standard, is the main goal for us to keep. It's a quite good message to us. So I would like to say thank you. We'll do my best, you know, our best. That's my response.
Yeah, so perhaps from a communication point of view, to be fair to you, you can say the balance sheet materially converged, but you shouldn't say it's really interesting. You should split it into two, to be honest, and say, on the income statement.
I think we are trying to answer about that.
Yeah.
I think what you said, what Kevin said, I think for revenue, that is more, because we are then more or less converged currently, but if now we have detailed guidance coming from the US, which we don't provide this guidance, and then to say it's converged, and then you have problems maybe with the regulators. That was your point, saying, okay, then maybe people will interpret it that IFRS, you have to look at all the detailed guidance coming then from the US, and I think that is really an issue.
We've had questions from the SEC on IFRS 2 for not applying an EITF question because it's converged. You know, it's, we've seen it happen, I can see it again. There's just one other thing, Hugh was talking about the disclosure initiative. If we take the net debt ED, it doesn't help the disclosure initiative when there's phraseology that says, and any other information you think is relevant. That process, it's not auditable and it's not capable of being regulated. And therefore, it doesn't help the disclosure initiative because you then end up with suggestions from regulators or from auditors, well, we think this is relevant, we think that's relevant. Suddenly we go from a one-line sentence to a five-page because it's relevant. I think if we're going to go down amendments in terms of disclosure, we've still got to continue watching the words that we use because the words tend to get expansive rather than cut the clutter.
It's about, we're seeking the encouraging preparers to exercise judgment. We try to live in a principle-based world. Each preparer will have different views about what is material relevant to them. I think that's where we're trying to put the emphasis, encouraging preparers to to focus on what is important to them rather than try to get a rule which we say applies to everybody, which will inevitably never be the case.
Yeah, but when it appears in standards like that, as opposed to the conceptual framework, is that
we need that feedback then, because the thing is, if we're moving away from prescriptive lists, we can't just simply say, well, there's three things you have to disclose and you're done.
Yeah.
You have to say, well, there could be things, the factors to think about.
So that's got
to be... By the way, it's not just an isolation. You have to look at the clarity of the objective. It is, what are we trying to achieve with the disclosure? What information are you trying to explain? And so it's a package of things. But if there's some feedback saying you can't work with it, or you're saying others can't work with it, then we need to know that, because we've got some work going on with the New Zealanders at the moment on drafting. They're having a go at redrafting I-16 on PP&E in a more principled way to see if we can draft something that's less prescriptive and won't lead to pages of reconciliations for companies that really haven't got any PP&E, for example. And they will have words that are slightly expansive and slightly, you know, don't tell us this if you don't need to.
Yeah, I think it was very just in that, in the net debt reconciliation ED, it was like, I don't even know how to answer that question, because with multiple users and what could be relevant for one user is maybe not relevant for another, and it could become. So our comment letter from South Africa has commented on suggestions that could be considered rather than open-ended and relevant.
Okay, Malcolm and then Olivia.
If I may move on to a different topic.
Yes, it was on the
subject. On leases.
Yes. Okay. Not on leases, but on the fact that I think that the relevance is the only way to help to make disclosures that are sufficiently concentrated to be not a list or a full information. We said many, many data that nobody reads. So I think that the fact to say that the management and the entities should make that judgment of what is relevant is a good thing.
And I agree, because we are trying to change the mindset, the behavior, because we think the disclosure issue is a kind of behavior problem. And if we go more to principle-based saying what's relevant, but if that is second-guessed by auditors, by regulators all the time, I think that will not work. And that I think we have to find out in this disclosure initiative, can we do that, or is it really then enter into more problems than we currently have? Mark?
So if I may just move on to one of the other points which you covered, IFRS for SMEs, and the issue is whether or not you shouldn't contemplate, let me frame it differently, I was actually with the IFRS Foundation was in Switzerland a couple of weeks ago. I think one of the reasons they came to Switzerland was the fact that certain Swiss mid-cap companies are moving away from IFRS to a local Swiss standard for actually designed for SMEs, but also allowed for publicly quoted companies. And I think there was, so the foundation was doing a bit of fact-finding, trying to understand that situation. So that's in Switzerland, pretty developed market. But then I hear, from your own publications, you say that IFRS is being used in 100 countries or something. But I just wonder, not being disrespectful to the different countries, whether there wouldn't be, whether first of all you've really got in some of the smaller countries where you feel it's being applied, is it really being fully applied 100%? So isn't there some scope for allowing IFRS for SMEs to be used by sort of mid-cap companies, loosening up perhaps some of the disclosures, perhaps allowing a couple of alternatives from a measurement point of view, say on goodwill, perhaps deferred tax and some other areas. And why should you really bother whether or how the regulators around the world, which set of standards they use? I mean, if it's clear in the audit opinion that IFRS for SMEs is being used instead of full IFRS, it's clear to the reader. So perhaps what's your, and then perhaps a follow-on question is, we would also like, where we are having to use IFRS for statutory accounts, to also get that exemption, i.e. reduce a lot of the disclosures in jurisdictions where IFRS can be used for statutory accounting, you know, then you basically will be allowed to refer to the parent company for more detailed disclosures. And one has to say, actually, producing IFRS at the country level in statutory accounts, I mean, the whole area of intercompany transaction with the parent leads to an awful lot of time. So I think the scope for simplifying life, both for producing statutory accounts, but also I think many countries would welcome actually a slimmed down version of IFRS for use in mid-pack countries.
I think just to pick up your point, you said not to be disrespectful to certain countries, is full IFRS really being applied properly? I think we are very, we're thinking about that point very hard, this whole area of consistent application of our standards across so many countries. It's something we're definitely focused on. We've got two reviews coming up. So there's a review about the structure and effectiveness of the IFRS Foundation. We just have the agenda consultation. I think somewhere in those reviews, we will be thinking about consistent application. And I think it's important that we do because they are so widely used. I think that, for us, is something that we're very focused on at this point. In terms of your other point, it's good to get that feedback. I think we need to think about it. I think it's something we should reflect on.
Looking forward to discuss that as part of this general review. That was one of the issues about allowing whether mid-caps or others would be allowed to use IFRS listed entities. Sorry, the board actually discussed that very point about whether or not listed entities would be allowed to use IFRS or SMEs and voted no. So it's something that has come up quite recently in the last 6 months or so.
And what was the rationale of the board?
Because the listed company is a listed company.
Well, it's not for you to, I mean,
but the fact is, the regulator can. They can use, for also for public companies, IFRS from SMEs, but we can say, but they should not call it. They should call it then, whatever gap. But I think our brand name is IFRS for SMEs, and we have some reputational risk, I think, with our brand name, if it is misused. Because, for example, if a regulator for huge public companies allowing IFRS for SMEs, and it is still using the name, I think if something happens, our name is also in risk.
I think there are a couple of issues there. I think one is the question of whether you allow it for public companies or not. And the population the board has always had in mind, and Alan says that they've looked at it again recently, but it was also the original discussion when the IFRS for SMEs was set up, is that full IFRS is designed for public companies, and IFRS for SMEs was designed for non-public companies. So those were the populations that the board had in mind when it decided what the differences were between the two sets of standards. I think you raised another point there, because you said statutory accounts, and I think what you meant by that was parent only.
I didn't mean a subsidiary. Well, either parent level or subsidiary, subsidiaries of parents that have full IFRS accounts.
Well, if it's the entity only for the subsidiary, that's one thing. If it's consolidated and they're public using, that might be a slightly different
issue. No, I'm talking about entity only. Yeah, non-consolidated.
I think there might be a case for looking again at the IFRS for SMEs for the parent only accounts. Given that we would say the main ones are the consolidated accounts and the unconsolidated are supplementary. So I think there could be a case for looking at that again. I don't remember offhand whether the board has looked at that, but that might be a slightly different issue that might be worth raising.
That would be very, very helpful. I'm not sure, it's probably going to be a regulatory issue on a country by country basis, and I'm not sure how much are going to come off. But what would be, I think, helpful is rationalizing that by trying to do a study of who's looking at the statutory filing. I think our largest portion of our audit fee now is statutory stuff. And I suspect that they're filed or whatever, and then they go on a shelf somewhere where no one looks at them. And I'm not talking about tax books. It's just in the system, it's a total waste of resources. And all the disclosures required by IFRS are, you know, why do it if no one's looking at it?
Okay. Any other issue?
Given, you know, it's a comment we bypassed earlier, the number of small changes coming out as part of this disclosure initiative, sure being driven by the users, but from a repair perspective, it's death by a thousand cuts. We just dealt with net debt reconciliation, and we just had classification of liabilities. Why can't it all be put on a little agenda and just dealt with once in the principles of disclosure, and this constant little, you're trying to be useful, but it's not useful for the preparer. We constantly...
To be clear, the disclosure initiative has had only two lots of changes. One was for preparers, that was last December, and the net debt is, you're right, user-driven. Everything else has come out of interpretation issues that have been floating around. So we're very conscious of the disclosure initiative. That's as far as we're hoping. That's it. The only the two things that were finished already, and this one item on net debt, but the rest of it... That's out of normal interpretations, and I think what you're at, it's a general interpretation issue that these guys will talk about in a minute, but these are problems, practice problems that people requested for us to deal with. It's not out of the disclosure issue generally.
I think it's the challenge as well of, unless one makes narrow scope amendments, it's difficult to deal with the consistent application point, which we also get some sort of feedback on, so it's getting the balance.
So I think that'll feed into the work program for the next 3 years that you're going to consult on.
We're certainly consulting. We hear, obviously it's the case. Preparers don't like to have multiple narrow scope amendments coming out all the time. So we will certainly consult on this as part of the agenda consultation.
I think it is also a general point for the agenda consultation, because I think what you mentioned is okay. Too many changes and too often too many changes, and that is really. I think some cost for preparers, and I think that should be addressed also in agenda consultation if that concern exists, especially from preparers. Yep. Because that is what I'm hearing from many, saying, okay, it's too many, too often. Mm-hmm. And
we used to improvements project. So now we're in this anticipation mode. So we've got narrow scope amendments and improvements project. It's just all the time.
Okay, maybe one last point, and just, we have to move to the...
Perhaps two simple points. One is the IFRS taxonomy and the expert, using XBRL for US filings of IFRS. And the second point was the P times Q model fair value of investments. What's the initial feedback? So two follow-on questions.
The question, what's the status with the US?
Is that the question, basically?
Our understanding is the SEC staff have recommended that the taxonomy be approved in their process, which means that foreign filers would have to file XBRL instances with the SEC. They've done all these system changes so that they've got compatibility, because they're doing quite deep analysis now with their own filers, and they want to be able to do the same with foreign filers. They're very happy with the taxonomy as it is.
Any idea of the deadline? Would that be?
It's unknown at this stage. The decision has to be made at the senior level there. But the staff involved with the filing aspects of it have recommended that be approved.
And the last point,
I believe there's a range of views on that topic, so
it's a board paper.
We support Martin.
It's on the agenda for the March 1 week, and you can see the summary of things.
I think, yeah. And there is a range of people. We'll have to see right away.